This is Talk Is Cheap on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio. All right, this week, Michelle Holman and Rob Dickinson of Community Rights Lane County. They need your help to stop aerial spraying and mismanagement of the forest and our watershed. And their website is communityrightslanecounty.org for more information. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media. But first, an excerpt from June 14th's No Kings demonstration here in Eugene.
Climate crisis. Here to talk about it is the University of Oregon undergrad and a member of the Climate Justice League, a group pressuring the university to reduce its climate impact. Please welcome Jack Dodson.
Save trans kids' lives in other states. Give money.
Thank you.
The most important thing you're doing here today is giving money.
Thank you all for coming today. Since January, the Trump administration has rolled back critical environmental protections, opened up forests for clear cutting, laid off government employees stewarding our natural wonders and doing critical research on climate change, and continued the genocide and ecocide in Palestine that is causing horrifying levels of human death and environmental destruction. And his so-called big, beautiful bill that he's trying to ram through Congress was described as the worst bill ever for the environment by the League of Conservation Voters. We must stand up to this. Unfortunately, our local institutions aren't doing enough to combat the climate crisis either. Eugene is woefully behind on its climate targets, and the state of Oregon's policies lag behind what is necessary. Even the U of O continues to delay climate action and remains the largest source of emissions in Eugene. So we must fight the federal rollback of environmental policies and show Trump that we won't stand by and watch him torch our world. And we must pressure Eugene and Oregon to implement the climate policies that the science demands and the people deserve. We must also support indigenous calls for land back and push back against the ICE agents shattering our community. Solidarity. There is so much to do, but I see how many of you there are here today, and I know what we can accomplish. So please, find ways to get involved. Keep showing up to protests and support others doing so. Join local groups working to protect our environment and improve our community. Organize your workplace to demand more from the institutions with outsized environmental impacts, and more. Sometimes it's hard not to feel a little hopeless. To combat this demoralization, let's imagine the world we can create. Imagine salmon swimming in rivers free of dams. Imagine loving fire instead of fearing it. Imagine fresh air that's free from fossil fuel pollution. Imagine being able to take fast public transit everywhere you need to go. Imagine being active participants in how we steward the land. Imagine low-income communities and people of color having increased access to outdoor spaces instead of increased exposure to environmental pollution. Imagine not worrying about whether your favorite places will be lost to climate catastrophe. Imagine being able to soak in our wonderful world and not worry about how you will stretch your budget to feed your family. Imagine being able to go outside and truly enjoy it. We can build this better world. We can overcome climate change, environmental destruction, and every other crisis they're linked with. But we're going to have to fight hard for this world, both in the streets and behind the scenes. We won't beat Trump with protests alone, so we need to get organized.
Yes!
So, if you want to see this world, if you want your friends and your family and your children to see this world, let's get to work.
That's right.
know. What a beautiful problem to have. If everyone who has a little room around them can move to the east.
This is a straight initiative. This doesn't amend the county charter, so it has a lower bar to jump. And we learned a lot from our anti-spray work to try this backdoor method, which is just a straight lower bar, fewer hurdles to jump to get this on the ballot. They can't really mess with us in the same way. All right. So I'm Michelle Holman. I live out in Deadwood, which is about an hour and a half from Eugene in the Coast Range. I moved out here 40 years ago thinking that I'd moved to paradise, and there was logging and spraying going on. So like any good rabble rouser, we organized with our neighbors and tried to stop the spraying. Spraying is a legalized practice. No matter what you do, you come up against the statement, it's legal to do this. So that's when I defected from traditional activism and moved into the community rights world, which says we don't like the idea that it's legal. We're going to change the law. This is an unjust law that protects corporate logging over humans and critters that live out here and the natural world in general. So it's actually considered civil disobedience through lawmaking. Yes, there's a well-settled law that says you can spray. We don't want to do that anymore. We don't want you to spray us. We never consented. So this has been my work for the past, I think Community Rights Lane County started in 2012. So, you know, we're kind of, we've been here a while. We still haven't gotten what we want. So we're not going away.
And so, Rob, a little bit about yourself, about you?
Sure, yeah. I moved to rural Lane County into Cottage Grove in around 2010. So I've been here about 15 years. And my first time living in a rural area. And almost immediately after getting into Cottage Grove, I started working on various kinds of community building, community organizing, got involved with a group called Sustainable Cottage Grove. And I also started to learn about sort of what happens in rural areas where they, you know, clear cut log and then spray. I had neighbors who lost some animals and stuff like that. And not long after that, I sort of heard Thomas Lindsay's really keynote address to PILC in 2013, the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference. Thomas Lindsay was the founder and the executive director of the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund. And he just gave this unbelievable speech at the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference that really talked about how corporations were pretty much allowed to do whatever the hell they want in our communities, and that communities are often powerless to stop them, except for when they decide to fight back. And the way of fighting back was really this community rights movement. And not long after that, somehow I ran across all the good folks from Community Rights Lane County, Michelle and Ewan at the time, and other folks, and I've been pretty much active ever since, and was, you know, really involved in the aerial spray campaign when we were drafting that measure. I really kind of got a real education on how the initiative process works and doesn't work and all the threats to it.
And so do you want to give a brief explanation of community rights? You touched on it a little bit, but Community Rights Lane County is the organization that you guys started, or that Michelle started, right?
Yeah, well, Community Rights Lane County is the local chapter of an international movement, the community rights movement. And it was really started by CELDEF, Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, that Rob just referred to. We also have the state level organization, ORCORN, which is Oregon Community Rights Network. And that's in affiliation with other states in the U.S. I think there's about 8 other states that have active state organizations, and then they all have their locals. So Community Rights Lane County is the education wing of our work, and we have been dedicated to acknowledging that the system is messed up, that it's not broken, it's fixed to protect big corporations over nature and all her creatures. So, you know, when one of our lines when we introduce ourselves is, do you think it's fair, do you think it's right that corporations have more legal protections to harm us in our communities than we in our own communities have to protect ourselves from those harms? Very rarely do you get someone who says, yeah, I think that's great. In fact, it's kind of a unifying notion amongst all along the political continuum. You can talk to libertarians, you can talk to right-wing Republicans, progressive, middle of the road Democrats, and they all agree this is not fair. This is not just. So community rights, generally speaking, empowers local residents to write and pass protective laws that supersede and actually enlarge upon already settled law, and in many cases will nullify already settled law that protects the corporate state over us people.
All right, and so Protect Lane County Watersheds is a project of Community Rights Lane County, is that right?
Well, it's related. It's a different, Community Rights Lane County is a nonprofit organization and has to follow all the rules and regulations around nonprofit activities. And we consider it to be like our educational arm, essentially. We're basically out there educating the public about these corporate harms and also the whole community rights model. Protect Lane County Watersheds is essentially a petition committee. It's a volunteer organization set up to advance a specific initiative related to watersheds. But it is sort of in the spirit of community rights. It's basically a group of Lane County residents that came together to protect our clean water and to safeguard our health and safety, very much like what Community Rights Lane County advocates. And we're doing that by, drafting and then hopefully passing a countywide initiative that protects our watersheds. And, we've got people from all around the county that are involved, from, Florence at the coast to Jane Springfield, obviously, but, in rural Lane County, like Cottage Grove, where I live, we've got people all throughout the county that are engaged in this effort to protect our water and our watersheds. One of the chief petitioners is an indigenous member of a tribal community, so forth. And everybody pretty much can acknowledge that we all depend upon clean water. It's not something that's political. And so, we feel like this is a topic, it's a law that is going to have broad appeal.
All right, and so where are you on that process? You've got enough signatures now to continue with the initiative process, is that right?
Yeah, well, probably. I mean, we've collected probably well over 15,000 signatures, and we need 11,000 valid signatures. So on the one hand, it sounds like we've done pretty well, and we're almost done, but you don't, and until you've validated them all and turned them into the county and they've validated them and counted them, you don't know really whether you're done, because there's a lot of people who are voters, but they may not have updated their address, or there's just lots of reasons why, even if the signature doesn't match and people's signatures change, and there's just a lot of reasons why a bunch of signatures get thrown out. It's like somebody who really loves what we're doing just signs multiple times, that can subtract a ton from how many that we get counted. So it's in our interest to collect as many as we can until we turn them in, just to have this extra cushion. But yeah, we've done great everywhere we've gone, with our clipboards, with our volunteers. We really met with pretty strong support and people who get what we're doing. And so we're hoping to wrap up signature collecting, sort of at the end of June. In fact, we got some big events coming up, like Eugene Pride is I think last year we probably collected, I don't know, 600-700 signatures there. So we'll keep doing it until we're ready to turn them in, and then we'll be on to the next phase of the whole process. It is the Lane County Watersheds Bill of Rights. So this would put a law on the books for Lane County, and there's more than five watersheds in Lane County, so that's a big deal. Statewide, it's, there's a lot of things that should be done at the state level in terms of, reforming this whole preemption process, or, other things like that, or banning aerial spraying at the state level. But unless you have a ton of money, which we don't, you kind of need like $1 million to run a statewide initiative to collect 150,000, signatures, or more, right? And we're just a small volunteer group, and collecting for Lane County is a pretty big hurdle.
We do actually get out of Lane County and present in other communities, and we are trying to encourage other communities to even just take our bill, our law, which is a one pager, beautifully, elegantly written, and we want to give it to people. We want other communities to file their own initiative to protect their waters. So if we could get more people in their own community to do what we're doing here, which is doable, we could create maybe a patchwork quilt of protection.
But I mean, your first foray into this didn't work, right? And the only reason I want to illustrate to that to people so that they learn that what didn't work.
That gets complicated, but yeah. And in fact, it's just almost unprecedented what happened to our aerial spray initiative. We did everything that any group could be expected to do in terms of writing and writing that law and introducing it to the county. And it was designed as a charter amendment. And the idea there is that, we don't always know whether or not we can trust our elected official, even at the county level, to maintain the proper law or the proper policy. So if you just do an ordinance, like you, that's what a typical initiative is. It's an ordinance. It's the same kind of a law that the Board of Commissioners could pass themselves using a normal process. If we had put on the ballot an ordinance for the aerial spray ban, the commissioners could agendize and then take it off the books, some number of months later. So we thought that it was better to do it as a charter amendment so that only the voters could undo it if they passed it, which I think makes a lot of sense. And somehow the industry, with their fancy lawyers, managed to come up with some argument that there was some new standard for charter amendments that they had to have different components voted on separately. That what they sort of argued for and managed to get a court to agree with has never been done before in anywhere in Oregon, and has never been done since. It was sort of unprecedented how they dreamed up this new theory to keep us off the ballot, even though we did collect we collected 30,000 signatures for two different initiatives, and including the aerial spray initiative and the right to local community self-government. Those two initiatives, we turned those signatures into the county. They verified that we had given them enough signatures, that they were enough valid signatures to go on the ballot. And somehow the industry came up with this argument that the initiative had to be voted on separately in a certain way. And what's interesting is that all these sort of pre-election challenges or things like that are usually handled within, a very short number of days after you file the initiative. And they, came up with this argument, like, I don't know, almost a year later, once they saw that we were gaining ground and getting signatures, and they were sort of in a panic, I think, to figure out how to stop us. And then they dreamed up this new nonsense about separate vote.
Well, so that's what I don't understand, though, is what's different now than what you were doing before.
Yeah.
How is it?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a good question. And like I said, it's almost too complicated to explain, but we try. But be
And that's intentional. They intentionally make it
of course.
complicated,
Exactly.
so
The legal
do your best.
mechanism by which they disqualified or are kept from the ballot, our last initiative, had to do with it being a charter amendment. They tried to equate something that does affect state constitutional amendments. There are some provisions around state constitutional amendments requiring sort of separate voting on things that are sort of dissimilar. And they sort of tried to make a case that the same thing applied to charter amendments for counties, even though the rules in, you know, the rules governing the initiative process for cities and counties is different language and different code than that governing state constitutional amendments. But they, you know, they claimed that they were the same. We don't think that's valid. I mean, we had a pretty strong case that we petitioned before the Oregon Supreme Court, but you don't have an automatic right of appeal to the Oregon. You don't have an automatic right to be heard before the Supreme Court. They have to pick up your case, and they didn't pick up a case.
All right, so basically they threw an obstacle in it. You are trying to get around that obstacle, but you're still staying in the county, you're not moving to the state, and they may put in another obstacle to you, but you are going to find a way around that obstacle too and keep pushing forward because that's justice, and seeing that justice is done.
That's what we do. But my answer was too long, but basically this initiative, the Lane County Watersheds Bill of Rights, is formulated as an ordinance and not as a charter amendment. And so it gets around the nonsense they came up with last time. That doesn't mean that they won't come up with some new legal theory that nobody's ever heard of before. They probably will. But we don't know what it is yet.
Right, but I'm just saying to the listeners too, it's far from hopeless. It was just a technicality that you have gotten around, and they're delaying, of course they're delaying it. So let me move on. So what is a watershed? I mean, our water doesn't really go that far from where the water we drink doesn't come from the entire world, right? It's a cycle that the water here kind of goes out into the ocean and then comes back within a fairly limited cycle. That's what a watershed is, right?
Yeah, well, a watershed is basically the land area that catches water from rain and it flows into our rivers and streams and it's our drinking water and we use it for farming and for recreation. It's, each county, each area has a watershed. My watershed out here in Deadwood is different than yours in Eugene, and it's different than Rob's in Cottage Grove, although I think maybe Cottage Grove and Eugene share. No, you have different watersheds, don't you?
Where I'm in the Coast Fork.
Right. So it's just an area that where the water just drains down, and eventually it goes to the sea. Yes.
But I mean, still, the point is that they're different because the water that I'm drinking isn't really the same as the water in the next watershed. Is that that's the whole point. It's
That's
a
the whole point.
kind of a loop there that we are part of. And that's why it's so important that we maintain the watershed, because it's a loop that we are, a cycle that we are living within.
And it is a little, watersheds is not part of it's street language. People don't really understand it, and we do have our work cut out for us when we have to explain it to people. I tend to just say, "Do you want to protect our water?" And people go, "Yeah." And then we move into the watershed and why we have to call it a watershed, because it really is a geographical understanding that all of us should know about. I mean, I once went to a play where it was all about knowing your watershed address, because we live in a watershed. We are populating on these areas using these resources. Yet, how many people know where their water comes from? They turn on the tap and don't think much about it, right? But it's a kind of an important thing. If you want to be connected to your natural surroundings, you ought to know your watershed.
And we try to, like Michelle said, keep it simple and say, don't you want to protect our clean water? But the notion of watershed is also important because, like, it's not just the rivers and streams and lakes, because it's also the catchment area that goes into those, right? Because if you take the aerial spray example, so when they clear cut a stand of trees and then they come through it with a helicopter and spray that area that they're spraying isn't necessarily right against the rivers or the streams, but it is going to flow into it. So when the next rain comes and all of that area that's been sprayed, the rain comes, hits all that, and it's going to flow into the rivers and streams. And then pretty soon you have atrazine in your water. And that's the experience of some of our folks working on this.
Well, I just wanted to say that people often ask us, well, there we have a Clean Water Act. It's a federal act. Well, what we're purporting is that the government does a lousy job protecting our water. It's just not enough. It's not enough. The Clean Water Act allows a certain amount of pollution into our waters. Did anybody ask the people or the animals or nature if this was a good idea? Did we consent? Never. So we, as responsible residents of this area, have decided we're going to take it upon ourselves. We don't expect the government to do a stand-up job protecting our water. So we want to elevate water protections beyond what the government says is cool.
Right, there's a reason that the EPA was passed during the Nixon administration. This is that I'm not saying that we should not have environmental regulations, but the regulations tend to they just pay a fine after they've done the damage, and no one goes to jail or anything like that in these regulations.
It's the cost of doing business. They factor it in.
But I mean, the example that I use is in Egyptian times, they used to hang an architect. If an architect's house falls down and kills somebody, they would hang them. And people would show up with pitchforks and torches to these guys. And so it kind of instead of op kill it, cutting off people's heads that do this damage, it gives them kind of a free pass just to pay some money that isn't really punitive at all to them.
Not much of a deterrent.
What exactly does the Bill of Rights do? This comes out of the rights of nature movement that's going on across the world. What would cities be able to sue for their water quality being damaged, for instance, by a clear cut for silt or pesticides in their water from a clear cut or things like that? Or I thought Breitenbush, for instance, tried to sue before it burned down. Breitenbush had there was a case that they had where the water was damaged for their hot springs.
Oh yeah. So let's maybe just answer the first question is what does the bill do? And then maybe we can get into some examples. So really our Lane County Watershed Bill of Rights, it's a local law, so it's a countywide law. It only affects Lane County, and it recognizes that the multiple watersheds in Lane County have inherent rights to exist and flourish, free of pollution and free from harm from dangerous corporate activities. So if somebody were to be doing, say, point source pollution, dumping something into the Willamette, and that's causing, harm to our water quality, the county, because of the county law, should enforce the law and stop them from doing that, and then also should, cause them to repair the damage or to try to mitigate the harm that they've done. And there's essentially fines involved and an ability for to go after the polluter for what they've done to essentially to restore things to the way they should be, to the extent that's possible. It also recognizes that we in Lane County have a right to clean, safe drinking water. And so that's just it's the way that community rights work. Is set up is we recognize rights. So like the, that we have a right to clean drinking water, or that the watersheds have certain rights themselves. And that's interesting because we typically think of nature as just there for our human benefit and having no rights of itself, unless, like, for example, there's economic harm to someone who owns a piece of property. But we think that our watersheds deserve protection just on their own. And the interesting thing about our law, it would be a county law, so the county should enforce that and should stop any polluters when they're doing activities that are harming our watersheds. But it also gives residents in Lane County standing to enforce the law ourselves if we need to. And that's an important aspect of the law. We don't, like, as residents, none of us want to be, suing a polluter, but sometimes the government doesn't do what it's supposed to do in terms of protecting our natural resources, our ecosystems. And so it gives us an ability to step in if the county doesn't do what it's supposed to do.
Well, one of the foundations to our work really is based on a clause in the Oregon Constitution. It's Article 1, Section 1. And I grew up in Oregon. I had never heard this in my life until I got wor started working with community rights and drank the Kool-Aid. But that text says natural rights inherent in people. We declare that all people, when they form a social compact, are equal in right, that all power is inherent in the people, and all free governments are founded on their authority and instituted for their peace, safety, and happiness, and they have the right to alter, reform, or abolish the government in such manner as they may think proper. This is what motivates our work. We believe that it's up to us. We do have these rights. These rights have not really been respected. And so we are actually taking the mantle and moving this law forward, because all rights are the natural rights are inherent in people, the people. When we get together and we say we're going to do something like protect the water, we do it because we actually have been empowered to do so. We're just taking the power and moving it forward. We've always had it. We haven't recognized it. And I think that we couldn't be in a better time to be pushing back on a dysfunctional government. So, you know, the water is a unifying notion. And if we can't protect our water and we can't think in those terms, we're not really doing our job that future generations are relying on us to do.
Right. When I was a kid, you could actually drink from the streams. Most streams you could actually drink from. So they're using the right to farm right, I noticed, to justify pesticides. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. That's what we're saying. We are countering that. Just because it's legal doesn't mean it's right. And we don't believe in that. We believe that it's time for us to stand up and protect our natural world and future generations by rewriting law. You know, they love to say, well, it's legal to do this. And it used to be legal to own slaves. It used to be legal for women not to have the right to vote. You know, there are all kinds of laws that have been overturned, and here we are. We're just taking the baton and moving down the road. It's our turn.
Well, and Citizens United too. On the one hand, if a corporation has rights, why wouldn't nature, and why wouldn't a lake and a stream and a tree have rights, and the and the deer have rights, and fish have rights? But on the other hand, too, I'm wondering if we got rights of nature, I wonder if corporations would then use that to further their rights to set a precedent. Any thoughts on that?
We're always going to have a battle, Kurt. We will always have a battle. There's job security in being an unpaid environmental or social justice warrior. We will always have battles, and we're up for it. I mean, you can't unsee what you see. You can't unknow what you know. We know that there's injustice and corruption, and it's up to people like you and me to put our money where our mouths are. You know, we can do this. Because we really don't see any other option. You can't ignore it. We can't ignore it. All kinds of corruption and injustice is occurring on our watch, and it's really, we just have to gain momentum and get more people to feel it's their responsibility as well.
All right, and so I just went down to the Springfield City Council talking to them about the dilapidated houses, commercial property in Glenwood, right? And the city council person got up there and said, well, we can't tell people what to do with their property. All right, so even in a capitalist society, and I'm not defending capitalism, but even in a capitalist society, you're still responsible for the community that you are part of. You know, back in England, the black moths, the coal mines were turning all the moths black. And you can't just, and the more property you own, the more responsibility you have for the rest of the community. If so, where Weyerhaeuser owns these large swaths of property, they're bound to do more damage because of the size of their enterprise. So don't they have even more responsibility to the community?
Well, amen. They absolutely do. And, you know, if your government isn't holding the profit makers to some kind of level of responsibility, then it's going to be you and me. I mean, what are we going to just stand around and watch? That's what we've been doing. It's not working out for us. You know, the big rub that I see is that we really are at the cliff's edge, and we don't have that much time. In my opinion, we don't have that much time. But, you know, these are big behemoths, the biggest, baddest dogs in the yard that we're trying to hold responsible. And it's not going to happen overnight. But, you know, never underestimate what we can do if we come together. And I think that the potential, especially there really does seem to be quite a bit of resistance fomenting right now in the good old US of A. And we need to capitalize upon it. We just need to work it. We in Community Rights Lane County and Protect Lane County Watersheds are not going anywhere until we see the world that we envision. And that may not happen in my lifetime, but there are always going to be social justice warriors. Always, always, always.
All right, so a little bit about the history on this. Let's get there. There is a history of these movements, right? Because I've just started reading Kropotkin about he's talking about the Middle Ages, talking about mutual aid societies in the Middle Ages, and what he's saying is that throughout history, the community, first of all, the community made decisions. The decisions were made by the community, the whole community, to dis because it affects the whole community. And during the Middle Ages, partly why they're called the Dark Ages is because they don't want people to know this, but it was all the time they were constantly trying to stop the mostly the church, but the lords and the aristocracy from they were constantly trying to take power away from the aristocracy and put it down and flatten it down into the community. Right. So, do you want to talk a little bit about the history of this? This is, we are constantly, you've touched on a little bit, but we're constantly, maybe you want to elaborate, constantly trying to take power from the elite. And so that's why it's justified that you actually do this, because this is what we do. This is ne necessary for society.
Yeah, it's required. I mean, the powerful don't relinquish power. It has to be taken from them. That's, you know, history bears that out.
Right, but I mean that's why it's legal for you to do what you do, is because there's a precedent for what you do, is the point I'm making.
And you know, I think that that's something that a lot of the electorate don't understand. I mean, not only is it legal, it's really required. I mean, it's just part of being a good citizen. And, you know, civics is not being taught in school anymore. People don't really have a good understanding of the bedrock of resistance. And resistance is very, very much a US concept. We're just bringing it here. It's 2025. We've been at this since 2012. We have built an amazing community around it. We enjoy each other's company. We are doing the work I mean, we stand on the shoulders of giants. We're just doing it in our time.
Right. So it's nothing radical. It's not really you're not some radical organization, some leftist communist organization trying to overthrow the government. Well, I mean, you are trying to overthrow, you're trying to overthrow the corporation is more, which has been, but this has been done throughout history.
This has been done.
We're really just trying to recognize what seems like common sense rights of human beings to exist and have safety and health. And that's not so radical, I don't think. Having clean water shouldn't be like a crazy thing. It's not radical to have clean water.
It's also not radical to challenge greed, and that's really the foundation of the capitalist monster that we're living within. And I'm not 100% anti-capitalist. I believe that there is a compassionate capitalism. I believe we're living in toxic capitalism, and we are challenging that. Yes, absolutely.
And these are bully, really, it's bullies that we're trying to stop. Again, historically, throughout history, there's been bullies. And they're usually insecure, by the way. It's
They're not.
usually overcompensating for an insecurity.
Right.
So
You mentioned earlier, like Weyerhaeuser, for example, being one of the main landholders who's also doing a lot of the brickhead logging, for example. But what's really interesting is, I mean, we're trying to protect our communities, right? but like these companies are, I think they're probably like a real estate investment trust. They're Chuck Willer of the Coast Range Association does a wonderful presentation where he really talks about what's called what he calls Wall Street forestry, right? Where you have these out of state, huge out of state corporations who own vast amounts of land in your state and who basically extract all the resources from the state in the form of clear-cut logging and extracting all the timber. And then the money doesn't go into our communities, it goes elsewhere, right? So it's basically just sucking out all the value of our communities and leaving the residents to pay the price. And so that's the thing that we're really challenging, right? Is this extractive process that harms the community.
All right, so let's get into the science of water a little bit here. Let me pivot here to the science of water. So in permaculture and sustainability, there's a concept. I can never get this acronym, this aphorism right, but you want to make running water walk and walking water stand still because you want the water to soak in to the aquifer. An example I give too is the Army Corps of Engineers dug these trenches once in the desert, and what that does is it collects water in the bottom of these trenches and creates a lens of water down there, and then soon plant life starts growing, and it perpetuates into, and then trees start taking over, and it creates a water cycle, and that continues on, and anything. So we want beavers, for instance, to block the water and let the water soak in and create a wetlands, right? This creates life.
Isn't it fascinating that there was a time when it was legal to kill all the beaver, and now we understand that we have to bring the beaver back because they have a place in the ecology. Humans have this arrogance problem, and we just really need to be kind of dial it down a little bit and be humble to the natural order of things. Water, yes, water has its own wisdom, and the humans, in our infinite desire to, and lust for more, the ever seductive more, we don't listen to what's going on in nature. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot to learn. It's really incumbent upon all of us to sit where you are, where you live, and take note. There are things that are going on that are exactly right because nobody messed with it. And then you can look where we pave over a massive landscape, and we're having problems. It really is that simple.
And so one other thing though, this is why Johnny Appleseed was a real person because this is how valuable trees are. And whereas Horatio Alger was not a real person, if you remember Horatio Alger, where you pull yourself up from your bootstraps and this and that, Johnny Appleseed was a real person, and there's a reason Johnny Appleseed did planted trees.
I didn't know that Johnny Appleseed was a real person, but I'm glad to know that because we all grew up knowing about Johnny Appleseed, and we were inspired by his goodness.
They finally found a way to artificially make photosynthesis, okay?
Oh my
But
God.
you cannot replace a plant. A plant has taken millions of years of evolution to do what a plant does, all the things that a plant does, right? You can't just start doing photosynthesis without all the other things that a plant does, right? That's not going to work, is it, to replace everything with a machine? When you already have, why would you replace everything with a machine when you already have a machine that has taken millions of years of evolution to do? Why would you try to replace that machine that already works fine within a cycle, as long as it stays within a cycle? You can't just turn a cycle into a linear system, right?
Oh
Any
yeah,
thoughts on
you
that?
can. Oh yeah, you can. There are two questions we're supposed to ask ourselves. Can it be done, and is it appropriate? Well, Happy New Year. You guys created photosynthesis in a lab. No, thank you. I mean, no. Right? Yeah, we can go into space and populate Mars one day. And I wish that those folks that thought that was a great idea would go ahead and do it and leave us alone down here. But, no, it's not. It can be done and it's not appropriate. That is frightening news, Kurt. I hadn't heard that one either.
Well, and so we're not against technology. That's just it, is we want appropriate technology,
Of
is all we're
course.
saying, that is within Earth's cycles, not sectioning them out and then shaving off profit from that. I mean, you can even profit from an appropriate technology if you want, as long as it is within a cycle, is all we're saying. Nothing really radical about this. Again,
Not really.
well, so another one is this they're creating nanobots, and a microbe, though, again, has taken millions of years to evolve, right? Your my micro my microbe is always going to beat your nanobot eventually, right? It may take a while, but eventually they have microbes living inside of nuclear storage facilities that can actually withstand the radiation and stuff like that. They don't convert, they don't eat radiation, unfortunately, but they might be able to come up with a microbe that does that. But so that's what I mean is, again, this is millions of years of evolution versus something that you've come up with just in the last 100 years.
Yep.
Arrogance
Just
again.
a little side note. Before he founded 350, Bill McKibben, who's a brilliant author as well as an activist, he had this book called Enough, and he really looked at certain technologies that had the potential for enormous harm, and one of them was the use of nanotechnology for certain things. I think he also probably talked about gene editing as having certain, fairly cataclysmic possibilities if misapplied. So, but it's a really interesting book, and it talks about some of these things.
I just mean nanobots might kill us, but eventually they will lose eventually, is all I'm saying. And I didn't realize that fish, that salmon are actually part of this cycle, that they're pulling nutrients out of the ocean that the trees then use. So anything else about the Earth's cycles, any other cycles that you want to give as examples?
Well, I think one of there's this new information, not so new, but fairly new information about the fungi in forests and how the fungi is communicating. It's quite a cycle and feeds its own, but also feeds other organisms. The trees are feeding their own, but then they have root communications to other species of trees that they take care of. There's all kinds of cycles, and we are the best interrupter of cycles, the human beings. It's horrifying. And I often am in conversation with folks in the watershed restoration world, and I'm like, thank you for your restoring, but if we would stop a certain kind of behavior like clear-cut logging, which I think that those days are over, in my opinion, we wouldn't have to restore. And one of my watershed friends says, well, we'd still have, even if we stopped today, we'd still have 30 or 40 years of restoration. Okay, in geologic time, that's nothing. Well, how about we stop and start the count here? We just had a major restoration project up the creek where I live, and they were taking down trees, alders, for 3 months, 7 days a week, to lay these trees down to create a wetland, because it used to be a wetland, right? And then it was a then it turned into the people came and turned it into a pasture, and then these other trees grew. There actually is really good evidence that if you just leave it alone, it's going to come back. But all the fossil fuels that they use and their big D10s driving up and down our creeks, dropping all these trees, it just seems insidious to me. We are the great interrupters of the natural order of things, and we really have to take a pause. It's time.
Right, but we could be a steward of it, though. You know, Terence McKenna says, the mushroom anthropologist, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with him, but
Sure.
he said that we're actually plants brought us here. Mushroom spores can survive the rigors of space. So what his contention is that we are here for the plants. It's not the other way around. The plants aren't here for us. We're here to help the plants and propagate the plants and animals. And so I'm just saying, rather than like mountaintop removal, even if you put a park after you take all the coal out of the, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about we need to tread lightly and be a steward and encourage these cycles. And this is the prescribed burns too, was what is again enhancing. We can enhance these cycles, and it will be better, and we will be better off by doing that.
Yeah, be in service to nature instead of being just the takers.
And we would end up being in service to ourselves. What can people do to help pass the Watershed Bill of Rights?
Yeah, the Lane County Watersheds Bill of Rights. Well, you know, we're just a small group of dedicated volunteers, so we need pretty much every kind of help you can imagine. So we need volunteers to help with outreach events and speaking events and messaging and communication. We need fundraising help and graphics and web and social media. So pretty much anything that a volunteer group can use help with, we need. And so we would just love for anybody who has some time and energy and cares about this issue to get in touch with us and help us out. We need money. I mean, we are, it's we're trying to run a campaign in a pretty large county, and we don't really have the resources for that. And I mean, as was shown in Lincoln County, when a small little ragtag group took on the industry and passed the an aerial spray ban there by 67 votes. I think their campaign probably spent $20,000, and industry probably spent 2 million. So I think if I do the math right, it's 1,000 to 1, right? And so industry will spend literally millions of dollars to defeat our initiative once it's on the ballot. So we could really use some help with that too.
All right, but and you still need signatures. The more signatures, the better.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, we're hoping to wrap that up this month. So, if anybody, who's listening to this interview hasn't signed, they should find one of our folks and sign right away. We're going to be at Pride, and we'll be probably at the protest rallies this weekend. But yeah, we're hoping to wrap this signature collecting up pretty soon and be turning them into the county and letting them count them up for us.
All right, and which is the best website to go to? You have two different websites, I notice, it seems.
Well,
Yeah, Protect
we
Lane County Watersheds is the would be the right one to go to. Once we get qualified, and we do believe that we will get qualified, we're going to need door knockers, people to walk around and talk to community members and in their own. If everybody in a neighborhood could chat with their neighbors, educate them a little bit about this, we know damn well that our detractors will have all kinds of crazy lies that they get to spread about us. They will have a lot more money than we do to put ads on TV that, we won't have those kinds of funds. So we are very grassroots, and we rely on people who think like we do or who believe in what we're talking about to actually come out of their homes and help us.
Yeah. And everybody's part of one group or another. People are part of their church group or a civic group or just a knitting circle or whatever. I mean, people have different groups they belong to. And we really enjoy when people invite us to come to their group and talk. And we'll pretty much go anywhere where we're asked. And, we've been getting calls to come out. Yeah, we like Michelle said earlier, we don't even restrict it to Lane County. We just did a talk in Douglas County and Roseburg. And we'll go wherever we're asked, and just trying to educate people on what we're up to.
All right, Michelle Holman and Rob Dickinson of Community Rights Lane County and Protect Lane County Watersheds. Thank you very much for your time and your great work. Good luck to you.
Thank
Thanks
you.
so much, Curtis.
We really appreciate you having us on.